Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Vaccine Liability Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 12, 2010, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Brusewitz v. Wyeth, Inc. This case concerns the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which protects vaccine manufacturers from liability for certain injuries caused by their vaccines. Injured patients receive compensation from the government instead of the vaccine manufacturers. The question in this case is whether that immunity applies when the victim claims that the design of the drug created an avoidable and unnecessary risk to patients. To discuss the case, we have Mark A. Behrens, who is a partner at Shook, Hardy & Bacon, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Behrens.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to this November 2010 podcast discussion of Brusewitz v. Wyeth, Inc., a case pending before the Supreme Court of the United States this term. This case will decide whether the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 categorically preempts state tort law design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers for adverse side effects, or whether manufacturers must show on a case-by-case basis that the adverse side effects at issue could not have been avoided by a differently designed vaccine. The case has significant potential implications for the stability of the vaccine market and ultimately for public health. Congress enacted the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 in response to two overriding concerns: the inadequacy from both the perspective of vaccine-injured persons as well as manufacturers of a tort-based approach to compensating those who are hurt by a vaccine, and the instability and unpredictability of the vaccine market due to vaccine manufacturers' fear of tort liability. In considering the Vaccine Act, Congress found that the number of childhood vaccine manufacturers had declined significantly, and the few suppliers that remain had begun to question their continued participation in the market. For example, by 1984, only three commercial companies supplied diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, or DPT vaccine for the U.S. market. One of those suppliers estimated that its potential liability from DPT vaccine lawsuits was 200 times its annual sales for the vaccine. Such potential liability made it difficult for manufacturers to obtain affordable product liability insurance. By late 1984, two of those suppliers had withdrawn from the market, and the one remaining manufacturer experienced production problems. Congress responded by establishing the Vaccine Act, providing for comprehensive government involvement in the development, approval, and monitoring of vaccines. To provide faster and more reliable compensation to the few vaccine users who suffer adverse side effects, Congress established a generous, no-fault administrative compensation structure. Funds for awards under the plan are supported by an excise tax on each vaccine dose. To receive compensation for a vaccine-related injury or death, an injured child or that child's legal representative must file a petition in the U.S. Court of Claims, often called the Vaccine Court. Covered childhood vaccines are listed on a table maintained by HHS. The table also lists selected injuries known to be associated with each vaccine and time limits for the onset of those conditions. A claimant who shows by a preponderance of the evidence that he or she used a vaccine listed on the table and suffered an injury listed on the table within the specified time frame is presumptively entitled to compensation. The claimant need not establish any defect in the vaccine, any fault by the manufacturer, or even the identity of the manufacturer. A claimant who suffers a non-table injury, meaning an injury that is not listed on the table, must show that the vaccine caused the injury. The Vaccine Court compensates for current and future medical costs, cost of rehabilitation, counseling, and special education, lost earning capacity, and up to $250,000 for pain and suffering. To ensure adequate representation, the compensation program also pays reasonable attorney's fees and costs, including expert witness fees, even if there is no award to the claimant, provided that the claim was filed in good faith and with a reasonable basis. The Act forbids claimants from immediately resorting to a civil action for damages against the vaccine's manufacturer. But while claimants must begin with a petition to the vaccine court, the Act does permit a civil action to be filed if either of two conditions are met. First, a claimant dissatisfied with the decision of the vaccine court may elect to decline the award and file a civil action. Second, if the vaccine court fails to issue a timely decision, that is, one within 240 days, then the petition may be withdrawn and a civil suit filed. The Act generally provides that state law shall apply to civil actions alleging childhood vaccine-related injuries. The application of state law is subject to several exceptions, one of which is the subject of the Brusewitz appeal. That section, Section 22B1 of the Act, provides, no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1, 1998, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. States are barred under the Act from further limiting vaccine injury claims. The question before the court in Brusewitz focuses on Section 22B1's preemption provision barring state law claims, quote, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. The tragedy giving rise to this case occurred in 1992. Petitioners Brusewitz are the parents of a formerly healthy six-month-old girl, Hannah, who was injected with DPT vaccine manufactured by respondent Wyeth. Immediately after receiving the vaccine, Hannah began to suffer scores of seizures that left her developmentally impaired. Petitioners alleged that a safer formulation of DPT was technologically available at the time and that Hannah's injuries could have been avoided if this differently designed vaccine was administered. The Brusewitzes initially filed a petition in the vaccine court seeking compensation for Hannah's residual seizure disorder, which was not an injury listed on the vaccine table for DPT. The vaccine court dismissed the plaintiff's petition after concluding that Hannah suffered only non-table injuries and had not proved that DPT was the cause. The family then filed a civil action against Wyeth that was removed to federal court in Pennsylvania. Wyeth then moved for summary judgment, arguing that the Act's preemption provision expressly precluded liability alleging a defective design in FDA-approved childhood vaccines, regardless whether a safer alternative vaccine existed at the time of the vaccination. The District Court granted Wyeth's motion, and the Third Circuit affirmed in a 2009 decision reported at 561 Fed 3rd 233. The Third Circuit concluded that the statutory text of Section 22B1, the structure of the Vaccine Act, and the legislative history of the 1986 Act showed a clear and manifest expression of congressional intent to categorically preempt all design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers, while allowing manufacturing and certain failure to warn claims to proceed. A year earlier, the Georgia Supreme Court had reached a different conclusion in a case called American Home Products Corp. versus Ferrari, reported at 668 Southeast 2nd 236, where the court held that such a far-reaching interpretation must wait at least until the Supreme Court of the United States has spoken on the issue. The Supreme Court now has that chance in Brusewitz. The Brusewitzes have argued to the court that the Vaccine Act preempts only state tort law design defect claims that result from unpreventable side effects, provided that the vaccine at issue was properly prepared and the warnings were adequate. The determination would have to proceed on a case-by-case basis. Their position is that Congress did not declare all vaccine side effects unavoidable as a matter of law. Consequently, Congress did not intend to preclude claims like theirs that are based on injuries caused by alleged scientifically outmoded designs. Respondent Wyeth and the United States as amicus argue that Congress intended, through the express preemption language of Section 22B1 of the Act, to exempt vaccine manufacturers from tort liability for the designs of their FDA-approved vaccines while offering, through other provisions of the Act, to provide swift and fair compensation to the injured. According to the United States, the result of the Act is a robust federal framework that encourages the development of even safer vaccines and that provides compensation where Congress deemed it appropriate. In particular, Congress left open the possibility for civil claims for manufacturing defects and failure to warn, both avoidable events, while designating as unavoidable those side effects inherent in a particular design of a vaccine. Congress drew support in part from Comment K to Section 402A of the Restatement Second of Torts. Comment K recognizes that unavoidably unsafe products, such as the vaccine, are not defective or unreasonably dangerous as a matter of law, and the seller cannot be held liable for the consequences of the product's use if it was properly prepared and marketed and accompanied by proper warning. Wyeth also argues that petitioner's reading of Section 22B1's express limitation on civil liability would render that provision meaningless. Manufacturers would face design defect claims as well as manufacturing defect and failure to warn claims under state law now, just as they did before the Vaccine Act, and could obtain design defect preemption only after going through the time and expense of protracted discovery and defending each case on the merits. Moreover, if read as petitioners propose, Section 22B1 would preempt design defect claims only under circumstances where the manufacturer already would have won on the case on state law grounds, since manufacturers are not liable on a design defect theory for unavoidable harms. Finally, Wyeth argues that the vaccine market today is subject to disruption just as it was in 1986, as there are still only one or two manufacturers for a majority of the vaccines listed on the vaccine injury table. Wyeth also points out that hundreds of civil actions, mostly involving design defect claims, have been filed against vaccine manufacturers that allege the childhood vaccines caused the recipient to develop autism. Petitioners in these cases have the burden to prove causation because their claim conditions are not on the vaccine injury table, a circumstance, Wyeth argues, reflects the broad and deep scientific consensus outside of litigation that childhood vaccines do not cause autism. Were the court to hold that the Vaccine Act does not preempt design defect claims, the decision could embolden these claimants to pursue a flood of civil actions. Amicus American Academy of Pediatrics argues that the consequences of such litigation for the vaccine supply and ultimately for public health could be devastating.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.